Numbers aren't huge, but there's been an uptick in the number of COVID cases and hospitalizations this summer. Helix, the company that's helped the CDC keep track of virus variants, has seen cases rise at least 30% from June to July, from a pretty low starting point. We're talking about why we may be seeing this uptick, what it might mean for the fall, and we'll look at the new booster vaccine expected for this fall. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you or anyone you know had COVID recently? What do you want to know about current case numbers and the fall boosters? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ajay Sethi is an associate professor and director of the Masters of Public Health Program at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Ajay, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob.
What are we seeing in COVID numbers when it comes to cases and hospitalizations lately?
Yeah, well, since June, right about when schools closed for the year and summer travel season began, wastewater surveillance and people taking trips to emergency departments around the country, all those data indicated that cases were beginning to increase. And around mid-July, hospitalizations also began to increase. And we haven't seen an increase in deaths yet, but that's something to monitor and see what might happen in the coming weeks to months.
And to put things in perspective, we're not at this point anyway returning to the bad old days with really high numbers of hospitalizations. Do I have that right?
That's right. There is a lot of immunity out there, but some of that immunity that came from maybe a past infection and from boosters, which were offered beginning last fall, and a lot of that immunity begins to wane. And as people are gathering and traveling and seeing each other, you get this recipe for more spread.
One of the big questions here, is this a summertime blip or is this foreshadowing maybe a bigger seasonal increase in the fall? What are we watching for to see what the answer is going to be?
Yeah, again, it's not surprising that it's increasing because people are increasingly returning to normal, traveling, moving around, seeing each other. Obviously, most people are not wearing masks. Some people are, and that's great for their to reduce their personal risk, but most people aren't. There is a lot of immunity to help protect people, but that wanes over time. And so coming into the fall, it's a good time to, begin talking about the next booster that will be available.
I want to get into the booster in just a moment, but I want to talk about who might still be vulnerable as COVID numbers pick up a little bit. As you mentioned, a lot of people vaccinated. A lot of people may have had a prior infection, were mostly less susceptible, but it seems like there's a group of people in many cases vaccinated, but vulnerable because of a combination of age and pre-existing health conditions. Who should we be watching for the most when it comes to vulnerability to a bump up in COVID numbers?
Yeah, I mean, the people at risk for severe COVID are going to be those who are immunocompromised. For them, the vaccines don't take as well as someone whose immune systems are more intact. People who are elderly as well, simply because with age comes a decline in one's immunity and ability to mount an immune response. And like you said, somebody who has lots of comorbidities is at risk for severe disease. And all of those individuals really should do what they can to prevent getting an infection.
Talking to Ajay Sethi from the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at some of the latest COVID news, including, as you mentioned, Ajay, a new fall line of boosters coming out, I think anticipated to hit the health clinics and more in September, likely. There's some changes in the design in these new vaccines. What are we looking at?
Yeah, so we have had the bivalent booster, where half the vaccine is the ancestral strain, the original strain of SARS-CoV-2. And then added in there was the variant at the time when those boosters were developed, the BA.5 variant. In the fall, we're not going to have a bivalent booster. We're going to have a booster with just the latest strain, XBB.1.5. And the XBB variant, the family of variants, are circulating. And so it'll give people the most protection against what's circulating at the moment.
Looking at these variants, as I understand it, well, first of all, you mentioned the ancestral, the original COVID. We're not so much seeing that anymore. It's these newer variants. Why this 1.5? I gather it isn't, a dominant strain right now, but is it similar enough to, the variety, the grab bag of different variants out there that it should be helpful?
Yeah, the recommendation for XBB 1.5 is because that's where the data are from. That's what's been evaluated, and it mounts a good immune response when boosted with that. Sure, it is on a decline and being replaced with other variants in the XBB family, but they are very similar to one another. So the immune system won't have such a different response, whether it's XBB 1.5 or something else in that family.
People might be listening, thinking, okay, well, should I get a new booster? Shouldn't I? I don't know. Who would be at the top of your list for people who should answer that question? Yes, and probably as soon as you can.
Yeah, the CDC is going to make a recommendation on who should get boosted. And the expectation, of course, is anybody who's elderly, immunocompromised, people at most risk. For the general population who don't fall in those categories, we'll see what the CDC recommends. If somebody's indicated, certainly they should get boosted.
One big question all along, and I don't know if there's an answer yet, is COVID going to become a seasonal illness? Like we know in Wisconsin, roughly when cold and flu is going to come along. Has COVID settled into a pattern like that, or is that still a big question mark?
Yeah, still a question mark. It hasn't been seasonal yet. I mean, the summer uptick is an example where we wouldn't expect to see a lot of respiratory virus transmission in the summer, and yet we're seeing this uptick. Maybe it's an early increase for what's about to come in the fall. Maybe it'll decline and then it'll peak later. We haven't seen a seasonal pattern, and as an epidemiologist, I say we need a few seasons before we can declare something as seasonal. So for now, I think just keeping track of cases, hospitalizations are important, and see where the rises may be occurring.
And getting back to vaccinations before I let you go, Ajay, a lot of people got the original vaccines. It seems like there's been a diminishing return in terms of the number of people getting successive boosters, pretty low uptake in the scope of things for the latest round. Are you hopeful that more people will seize on the opportunity for this new one in the fall?
Yeah, I hope so. There's a lot of immunity out there. Over 96% of people have antibodies to this virus, whether it came from vaccines, whether it came from an infection, or a combination of both. A lot of people who have had recent infection might not feel motivated to get a booster since they have immunity from that form. But all immunity wanes, so it's important to maybe have a conversation with your doctor and discuss what your individual vulnerability is, and whether the booster is right for you. And of course, if it's recommended, there's a reason for it, why it's recommended for you, and it's a good idea to get it.
Ajay, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Ajay Sethi, Associate Professor, Director of the Masters of Public Health Program at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He talked to us about a recent increase in COVID cases and some upcoming vaccine boosters. Coming up, a lot of people who have had COVID-19 experience longer-term symptoms. We'll check out some new research on long COVID. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about longer term impacts of COVID? Have you experienced them? Are you experiencing them yourself or someone in your family? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about COVID-19. Now we're taking a look at a new analysis of patients with long COVID. Long COVID is the third most common neurological condition in the United States. It continues to be a problem long after the worst of the pandemic went away. You can join in at 800-642-1234 if you'd like to share an experience you had with longer-term impacts of COVID-19, or if you have a question about diagnosis, treatment, research on long COVID. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Mark Sala is an assistant professor of pulmonary and critical care at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine and co-director of the Northwestern Medicine Comprehensive COVID-19 Center, which provides care for and conducts research on long COVID. Dr. Sala, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Sorry, we had a line get crossed there. Sorry about that, Dr. Sala. So first of all, can you talk about this study? You treat patients with long COVID there at Northwestern. This study looks at more than 1,800 patients who have been treated there. What are some of the most significant things you found?
Yeah, thanks for highlighting this. So indeed, so our COVID recovery center, this comprehensive COVID center that we have at our hospital system here, what we've done is during really the early phases of the pandemic, we tried to take in as many individuals as we could who had persistent symptoms from the virus. Usually we define that as over 30 days after the infection, having persistent or new symptoms that can be attributed to COVID. And so in our circumstance, our paper describes really kind of our configuration of our center, what we found to be helpful in case other hospitals or systems across the country might find that valuable. And then the other component to our manuscript here is we really take a look at those 1,802 people and just kind of explain which different specialties among our 12 different specialties who take care of these individuals at our center. What was it like for, did people need to see more neurology, more pulmonology, more cardiology, and a lot of those practice patterns. And some of the conclusions there were that 85% of the people that we did see at our center needed to see either neurology, cardiology, or pulmonology, respectively. And those are predominantly where people have most of their persistent symptoms, as it turns out, with a smattering of other specialties involved, including ENT, dermatology, GI, for other ailments. And then when we looked at categories of types of people that we saw, we tried to really separate those out who were in the ICU versus those who maybe were in the hospital but not critically ill, and then those who were not hospitalized. And in fact, 80% of our entire cohort of people were never hospitalized for their illness of acute COVID. And we found that when doctors made decisions about what types of tests they needed, so as a pulmonologist, if I see someone who has persistent shortness of breath after COVID or maybe a cough that just won't go away, when we order directed testing like CT scans, pulmonary function testing, a really high proportion of people end up having abnormalities on those tests. So for an example, someone who was maybe never hospitalized for their COVID infection, just as one example here, we can see sometimes 1 in 5 people who are not hospitalized for COVID might have CT scan abnormalities that show some sign of inflammation or fibrosis in their lung tissue. So the point of our, the punchline really of kind of our paper and our findings was that multiple eyes from multiple specialties on these individuals who have persistent ailments, it tends to benefit them to have a lot of different doctors looking at them in the setting.
And that speaks, I think, to the pernicious nature of COVID-19, especially including in its long COVID form. At first we thought, oh, this is, you know, a particularly bad, but this is a respiratory virus. The virus did a lot of different things to different bodily systems. And that sounds like that's playing out in what you're seeing in long COVID.
Yeah, I mean, one might argue that, in fact, while the most severe morbidity and mortality that came about early in the pandemic was indeed pneumonia and the consequences from it, but that the longer lasting issues now are mainly manifestations such as brain fog, cognition problems, and really just profound fatigue for a lot of people. So the landscape has changed. I mean, vaccines and how the virus mutated changed a lot of what we've been seeing. But yeah, you're right, though. I mean, the myriad ways in which this has afflicted people and for the time and trajectory has been otherwise pretty unexpected.
Let's bring on a caller. Jessica is with us in Appleton. Jessica, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Jessica?
So I just wanted to talk about, like, my experience with COVID. And honestly, like, it's been 3 years since I had it, and my life has changed dramatically for the worse. You know, my brain fog, I'm fatigued, and it's not just those things. It's also that, like, when I get sick now, I get really sick. I am, like, laid up in bed from colds. Like, our immune system is not a muscle that we need to flex. Like, if something doesn't kill you, it doesn't necessarily make it stronger. It might just make you weaker for the next thing to kill you. Especially since we have, you know, in this country, we have not, our excess deaths have not gone down to our pre-pandemic levels. So that would kind of suggest that long COVID is something that we're kind of just pushing under the rug.
Jessica, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Sala, unfortunate for Jessica, but I'm guessing this is the kind of story you hear a lot from patients there at Northwestern.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things I would highlight there is that it sounds like based on her 3-year duration, she was probably one of the individuals early in the pandemic who acquired the illness, very likely pre-vaccine era sort of thing. And so, but that in itself is actually not unheard of. And in fact, you know, it's actually quite common where someone got an infection 3 years on, they're still struggling with a lot of the cognitive issues, especially in this idea of having subsequent flares when someone gets a respiratory illness or you know, on a given day is also a pretty stereotype phenomenon as well.
Thanks a lot for sharing that story. And Dr. Saul, I want to focus on one thing she mentioned, fatigue. And I think sometimes I hear the word fatigue and think, oh, yeah, we're all a little sleepy sometimes. As I, at least in things I've read, the people experiencing long COVID, fatigue means something pretty different and really life-limiting in some cases. How big a symptom has that been?
Yeah, there's two things I would separate out there. One is fatigue, where sometimes people describe it as, they'll be going about their day and then they just feel a profound, need to just kind of lie down and maybe not even sleep, to be honest with you, just lie down and take a break for a second there. There's that fatigue. And then there's also something I would just kind of be a little bit more nuanced about, which is what I call exercise intolerance, where a lot of people maybe were previously very athletic marathon runners in some cases, where they really cannot get back to their prior pace or clip when it comes back to activity. And sometimes when they do try to push it to 100% of what they knew as their baseline is when they can really suffer for the next several days. And that's actually kind of a phenomenon we refer to as exercise intolerance or post-exertional malaise, where that sort of activity kind of hits them hardest. So two slightly different twists on the same concept, but definitely important to kind of tease out as the provider.
Dr. Saul, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for sharing your research with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's Dr. Mark Saul, Assistant Professor of Pulmonary and Critical Care at the Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, Co-Director of the Northwestern Medicine Comprehensive COVID-19 Center. He talked to us about a new analysis of just over 1,800 long COVID patients who have been treated at the center.